And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Whoops. Here we go. Okay, welcome to another program called Health Essentials. If you've never tuned in before, I'm glad to have you as a part of the program. I want to read this to you to try to answer a question from a caller. This comes from, where did I find this? Anyway, let me just read this to you. Pasteurized cow's milk has been implicated as a trigger for insulin-dependent diabetes. Do you know what that means? That means people that require insulin injections. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has warned that processed milk can cause problems. When pasteurized and homogenized cow's milk proteins are altered, enzymes are destroyed and fat molecules reduced in size. Additionally, a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine reported that a protein in cow's milk causes elevation of antibodies that actually destroy insulin-secreting beta cells in the pancreas in genetically susceptible people, thus increasing the risk for developing diabetes. So just consider this. It's not a panacea, but if you have a child that has type 1 diabetes, it is absolutely vital that you avoid pasteurized, homogenized, processed cow's milk. Because what we want to focus on is, what can we do to turn the situation around where maybe there's some healing or repair, rejuvenation? I apologize to you. I just missed a phone call. If you'll call back, I'll get you right in. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Here we go. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you so much. I have a problem with plantar fasciitis and also a heel spur. And I've done some exercises. I've got a golf ball, rolled my heel, my foot over it. But are there any supplements, anything I can do, change my diet to help this?
How much sugar do you consume?
Not a lot. I've cut back on that because I listen to you. But I do have a bit of a sweet tooth. But I am trying to replace sugar with things like honey. You know, instead of the sugar, I drink unsweet tea or cut it half and half if I'm ever out. But I've tried really to cut the sugar out.
Well, what is your best guess right now? Why do you think you have plantar fasciitis? Is it just one foot or both?
Both.
Okay.
Probably being overweight, for one. I played tennis, I don't know, in junior high. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I do know that I rotate my feet out. I've seen the wearing on my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from that, I don't know.
Okay. Let me give you two or three ideas, all right?
Okay.
Probably everything that you said is true and correct. And, of course, I'm going to kind of go off on a limb here, and everybody's probably going to think, oh, this is just crazy talk. But this is what I think. A lot of times when I see plantar fasciitis with a bone spur that's forming on the heel bone, I think the conditions are just right for crystals to form. And so I'm going to go back to what you said earlier. The most common type of tea of all time is called black tea. If you go to any restaurant, any fast food, and you say, I'd like a glass of tea, please, that's going to be orange pico tea or black tea. I think it's beautiful. But
yeah.
To make a long story short, it absolutely has the highest concentration of uric acid of any food that I know of. And it's different than green tea or white tea because this has actually been fermented with a particular type of fungus that kind of makes it rot, but it also gives it off a beautiful color and taste. So if you drink tea, you might see a very, very significant improvement, meaning a clearing of your plantar fasciitis, just by avoiding black tea for a short season. Usually it takes about 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
So, but do you actually drink tea every day or no?
Not every day. No, sir.
Okay.
but I do have the, you know, Lipton, brew it yourself, and then you can sweeten it if you want to with whatever you want to. And typically I sweeten it with, I'm changing my taste buds to sweeten it with the honey, as I said, instead of the sugar. But I don't have a problem with the green tea. I do like green tea, and I don't know if I've found white tea or not.
It's the black tea. The fermentation process builds up uric acid, and those crystals build up and form down the arches of the feet and on the heel bone. So anything that's chronically inflamed, your body's going to calcify it. Thus, you have a heel spur forming. So let me give you another take on this. So I am a huge fan of castor oil, and I think there's one simple technique that's definitely worth a shot for plantar fasciitis on both feet, and that's just very simply getting a pair of wool socks. My favorite, most comfortable form of wool would be the merino wool. You get what you pay for. I would say a very good pair of socks to do this with will probably be somewhere between $6 and $12, which they're going to last a long time. I think I wear merino wool socks every day. There's nothing else I want to wear.
Okay.
In the sock kingdom, I mean. I don't know if they make wool underwear yet, but I'm open to it if they make it.
Okay. Well, I figured you didn't walk around in just socks.
No, I don't. But what you would do is you would take and try to put a generous coating of castor oil all over your feet.
Okay.
And then you cover it with wool socks. And hopefully, night after night, you just use the same wool socks. You never wash them. And when you go to bed at night, you just rub the castor oil all over your feet. And then go ahead and cover them with the merino wool socks. Tell me if your feet start to feel surprisingly better. Another technique that I am a huge fan of is walking barefooted.
Ah, okay.
Probably not going to make logical sense, but what happens is when we wear shoes, whether it's a pair of jogging shoes or whatever shoes a person might wear for support, it prevents the arch from moving properly, and I think it actually causes a lot more problems than what it helps. So, for the person that's wearing tennis shoes all day long and has no foot pain, this conversation is not for them. But for the person that has plantar fasciitis, boy, if we could get you to the beach at Gulf Shores, Alabama, where they have white sand that's very, very soft. Now, if it's 100 degrees outside, the sand could be close to 225 degrees Fahrenheit. So maybe today or right now is not the best time. Well, no, right now would work, but it's either that or this evening, right?
But if exactly.
Do you have a nice yard where you can walk barefoot?
No, not exactly, but I'd love to go barefooted. And actually, my nephew and I just got off of vacation, and the dogs were barking, so I stopped and bought some shoes, Bionics from Dillard's, and I can tell a little bit of a difference. So
okay.
I'm hoping that that's going to help, because I am one, when school starts again, I'll be on my feet a lot, and all. But no, I love walking barefooted, but
have you tried any type of stretching exercises for your feet or your arches or your calves?
Not on a regular basis, no.
I know this is I'm just making it simple, but usually every case that I've ever seen of plantar fasciitis, the calf muscle or the Achilles and the calf are just always way, way, way too tight.
Yes.
And so sometimes I'll just say, all right, let's see how far you can flex this way and that way. And when you look at it, you're going, wow, that is one stiff muscle. Yes. So maybe you could get online and just look up calf stretches. I like a technique called foot circles. I like rolling the foot. It requires somebody else to do that to you, where you just take, if you were laying on your back and your foot was at the edge of the bed, and somebody came and approached the sole of your foot, and they put their left hand on one side of your foot and the right hand on the other side, and they just rolled it back and forth like they're trying to roll a rolling pin between their hands.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very good technique for trying to work that longitudinal arch of the foot, and what you're doing is you're helping to break up adhesions. I realize if you went to a podiatrist, they would try to fit you into like a $600 pair of orthotics. I'm not saying that's not beneficial.
Right.
Personally, I like those ones called Spinco CrossFit trainers. That's probably the easiest ones to help bring the feet back in alignment for somebody that has massive rotational problems with their foot, and that's creating extra stress every time they take a step.
Okay.
I like the technique where you walk on the balls of your feet instead of letting your heels touch the ground. I can tell you right now, after 30 seconds, you'll tell me your legs are burning on fire from doing that.
And it's either do that or sit, which makes it difficult to do things. So, no, amazingly, I've done that just because it hurts so bad. So then I'm thinking, well, maybe I should get a pair of heels, which I haven't worn in years, and that would look really funny, me trying to learn how to walk in heels again.
Oh, no. When you're at the beach, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, you asked me about supplements, and I haven't even answered that, so let me cover that topic. There is a form of calcium. It's called calcium. It has calcium and ammonium chloride. And so those are the two ingredients. It's just calcium and then ammonium chloride. Sometimes that shocks me, if not totally surprises me, even though I've seen it over and over again. If I give that to a person, sometimes their heel just completely stops hurting. I started to say like magic, but I don't really, you know what I mean, though.
Yes.
It can be just very, very shocking how fast the ammonium chloride can work at killing the foot and the heel pain. So, you've got plenty of things to work on. You've got plenty of things to try. If I had my way, I would probably recommend more green vegetables. It's kind of hard not to recommend a salad if you like those sort of things. I try my best not to refuse, any salads that anybody prepares for me.
Okay.
They're going to make them. I'm going to eat them.
Exactly.
But that's what I would look at right there. And you can always try the homeopathic remedy called Arnicare. It's just a gel that you can rub on the arch of your feet. But if it were me, I think I'd take my shoes off and go outside. Now, I'm not saying you have to walk up and down, grass burrs and everything else to hurt your feet. But you might find a little bit of patch of real estate where you could just walk around on.
I will do that.
You know what I'd be curious of? And this is just a simple self-test. I'd be curious how well you can maintain your balance if you were to walk outside, take your shoes off or sandals or whatever you have, and just stand on one foot. And I think if you can stand on one foot for 30 seconds and maintain good balance with your eyes closed, I think that you're an exceptional athlete, and that tells me you have great communication between your brain and the arch of your foot. But if you wobble around, I would encourage you to greatly enhance neurological tone to your foot, and that's something that's going to help this pain go away.
Fantastic.
Have you ever heard before that the same neurons that regulate pain are also what helps prevent depression? Well, it's totally true. That's one of the reasons why sometimes doctors prescribe antidepressants for people in chronic pain, but there's a better way. It's improving yourself. So if you'll try that balancing technique, what happens if you fail? Keep after it. Don't give up. Your brain is more than willing to improve you and to become a little bit more flexible and plastic to where you can tell me there's an improvement. So let me know what happens.
I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Now, this is very short right here. I think I've probably been bombarded as much as anybody else has with advertisements have come to the office, and actually some have come to the home, but, I don't really spend much time on junk mail. Some people like to read that stuff, but just the concept of how we need to use a supplement or a drug to improve nitric oxide. Well, I'm going to go to the phone lines, and I'll come back in just a second to this topic. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a couple things to say to you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. For about 30 years, I've been having foot itch. We're talking about feet today. Might as well get onto this bandwagon. And I have tried everything from, alcohol, Calgon, salt, Epsom salts, all of the commercial, whatever. Doctors can't see a rash, it gets so bad sometimes I want to pull my toes out. Just twist them out.
Well, what was the very first thing that you said? Did you say it was foot itch or foot rash?
It's an itch. It is not a rash. They can't even see anything on my foot. But what I wanted to say to you is, thank you, I heard you talking about the castor oil a while back. And so I said, that's something I haven't tried. And I sent my daughter-in-law out, and she brought me a bottle of it, and I slathered some on my feet. And I'm going to tell you, it works.
Did it really? Wow.
I mean, I have not had a bout like that since I started that, maybe 2 months ago.
So it really, really did help.
Yes, it totally, I mean, not totally. Okay, now and then I'll get a few tickles, you know?
Yeah, but that's a lot better than what it was, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So this is a significant improvement, right?
Absolutely.
Well, good. Way to go.
But my main question today is, I have two little questions. You mentioned hawthorn. That's mm-hmm. for the heart, did you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think last week I read just a little bit of abstract how it helps dissolve clots that form in the body. And so in my mind, that's good information to know.
For high blood pressure?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. What's your opinion about the baby aspirin?
Well, if you keep just a very open mind, there's no emotions attached to this. I realize it's promoted by every physician that walks and lives and breathes, with maybe very few exceptions. Mm-hmm. Every doctor I know of is going to recommend a baby aspirin once a person gets to a certain point in their life to keep their blood thin, or at least that's the premise that we're exposed to. If you look at research, I'm just going to try to be factual. If a person takes a baby aspirin every single day, mm-hmm. and that's what, 81 milligrams of salicylate? Mm-hmm. And so what happens is they've done broad-based studies on almost every body type, whether it's male, whether it's female. Probably most of those have been done on male. But they've asked the question, okay, is there any blood loss at all when somebody takes a baby aspirin? And I know there's a wide variance, but this is the best that I can tell you. Every day that a person takes a baby aspirin, there's going to be somewhere between 1/2 teaspoon and a tablespoon and a half, or 1.5 tablespoons, that sounds better, doesn't it, of blood loss every single day.
Just blood loss, or blood is loss. It blood not reproducing? Not.
No, blood loss. That means it causes your blood vessels to leak, and you're going to lose that much. So that has to be replaced. So you can take a baby aspirin, and if you have confidence in it, but the problem is you're asking your bone marrow to work a little bit harder than what it normally would, because it's got to replace that teaspoon of blood that you've lost. That may not sound like much, but
well, it's really not good if you have osteopenia.
What'd you say?
It's really not good for you if you have osteopenia.
Well, yeah, because with osteopenia, your bone, you don't have that rich, thick bone marrow like you used to.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's all right.
But there's to the best of my knowledge, the latest stats show there's a minimum of 20,000 people a year just in the U.S. that are hospitalized with serious, serious bleeding they can't stop, and that's because of aspirin. And it's been estimated it's exactly 2,000 to, I think, 2,300, somewhere around there every year, that die just because they bleed out.
Okay, so if I stopped taking it, there's no sudden effect on me. I mean, I'm not going to.
Well, I can't possibly understand every nuance of your present situation, but I can tell you some things that I like very much, and I hope you'll let me say that. Now, I think I could probably build a case, if you gave me enough time and you wanted to go through all the scientific evidence for things like fish oil, blackcurrant seed oil, ginkgo biloba, garlic, turmeric, resveratrol, potassium, magnesium. All those things, they play a very interesting role at helping to make sure that you're... Can I go back to potassium just for a second?
Mm-hmm.
They've shown that where people have absolutely the lowest potassium diets on Earth, they almost always have the highest occurrence of strokes. I don't want you having a stroke. I don't want my enemies having a stroke. I just...
How do I get potassium without eating a lot of fattening bananas?
Well, what would you say are the best foods that contain potassium? Because if you get it from your diet, that's the best way to go. Do you like avocados?
I love avocados.
Do you like sweet potatoes?
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, I mean, just find the things you do like, and we'll go with that.
What else?
Well, green leafy vegetables are fabulous. Celery is fabulous. If you don't want bananas, then you can look at things like cantaloupes and watermelon. Of course, most of the potassium and the good minerals are just right down there where you close to the Rhine.
Yeah, which I don't get close to. Okay. The doctor put me, I had very high cholesterol. And they, you know, tried all these statins, and I said, no, I did a lot of research on that. I said, there's no way. I would rather live a short life with a good brain than a long life in limbo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I won't take the statin. And so I asked him, I said, well, how is the baby aspirin helping? And he says, that's not doing anything. He says, that's for your heart. I said, well, I've got a good heart. He says, yeah, you've got a good heart. He says, it's for, I have moderately high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
which was 133 over 65, I think.
How much stress do you have in your life?
Well,
quite a bit, right?
No, about 5 years ago, I was teasing the doctor. I said, I'm going to live to be 103. He says, I'm not giving you to 73.
Man, so you have an extremely positive, educating physician here. Go ahead.
Anyway... my stress was out, you know. So I ran away from everything. I left my place, my home, my, you know. I'd already retired from my work. So.
I'm actually thinking about doing that this afternoon, but go ahead. Sorry.
Well, anyway, I moved on to my son has built me a little cabin on his property. And some people might call it a shack. I call it my castle. It's high and dry, and it's got everything in it I need.
Fine by me.
I just, you know, every day I can sit down and write my articles, and nobody's bothering me. I just love it.
Oh,
you know,
great.
And I just turned 74, so I guess it helped.
Well, you beat the physician's estimation, didn't you?
Right, yes.
The reason I said stress is because when your blood pressure is 133 over 64... What you have is you have 36 plus 33. What is that? I mean, with that, you have what's called a wide pulse pressure gap.
I don't know what that is.
Well, that just means there's too much space between the upper number and the lower number.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not trying to make it into a panacea, but the number one reason why is you have too much adrenaline coursing through your veins. So how is your sleep at night? Do you have high-quality sleep?
No.
Well, and that's the number one predictor of whose sleep is not going to be great is excess production of adrenaline. So when you lay down in bed, you say, you know what, I'm going to lay on my right side because I think that's more comfortable. And within just a few moments, you go, you know what, I just thought I was comfortable. Now I'm going to turn
over. Well, that's just it. It's a muscular ache and joint ache.
Well, I know, but that's what adrenaline does. It causes your joints and your muscles to break down at a faster rate.
Uh-huh.
Anytime that tissues break down faster than what you can replace or repair them, you're going to have symptoms. And so if you have symptoms, you know, that would be one simple way that you could actually improve your health is by greatly improving the quality of your sleep. Running away from home might be number two.
I get 8 hours of, I've always all my life, you know, make sure I have 8 hours of downtime at night. So even if I'm not sleeping, I'm down. But it's not.
But is that what you really want?
No, I want to rest. I want to wake up alert in the morning, feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a morning person, and this is, you know, putting a kink in my... But the thing, I asked the doctor, why did he give me baby aspirin? He said, that's just what we do.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you have it.
So I'm going to get off of that. And
sure.
Does Hawthorne come in pills?
Yes, ma'am. Pills, capsules, tablets.
How about potassium?
Same way, but I think your best bet's getting it from food.
Yeah.
And I think I think you could probably build a good case if a person has too much adrenaline coursing through their, actually, can I be positive for a second?
Sure.
Without adrenaline, it's hard for a woman to be extremely creative. So it does serve a good purpose. But if you do have, you can have an imagination, you can be creative, you can play along with other people, you can make up stories, you can write your articles, all that's great.
Uh-huh.
But excess adrenaline over time, it's going to make your blood a little bit thicker. It's going to be a little bit stickier. Your joints are going to break down. Your sleep is going to be continually disrupted, where you just never sleep well. And you're going to be a little bit more restless. And let me think. What else would I say? Oh, yeah, you don't feel as calm on the inside as what you'd like. So you almost feel like you're striving against yourself sometimes. But what you want is you want peace. And if you sleep 8 hours a night, that would be a bonus. But if you get your potassium, actually potassium does play a precise role in helping your body rid excess adrenaline. There's plenty of studies that show that as people age or human beings age, that their adrenaline levels go up. So unless we actually figure that one out, there's going to be a lot of people that suffer. Maybe suffering at the hands of medications they don't need. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want to make sure. I'm not doing something that's killing me while I'm trying to fix myself.
I like that plan.
So, and I do, thank you so much for all my life we've heard about castor oil, and the first thing you think is, Nancy.
Well, great.
But no, this works.
Well,
I never thought of taking it topically, so I thank you so very much, and I'll...
Oh, you're welcome. Well, thank you for your phone call. Okay, good deal. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, I have a phone line open at 903-586-5257. I have my 7-year-old daughter getting up to the other mic. She's got a mysterious look on her face like she wants to say something, but she's not going to. Good morning. There we go. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Last week I was listening and taking notes, and you were talking about cataracts and something about castor oil and cod liver oil, and I'm thinking you said some wheat germ oil.
I definitely said wheat germ oil.
Okay, now how do I put these drops in your eyes? Well, I went to the granary and got all that.
Well, the wheat germ oil, I think that's probably going to be best if that's taken orally. So
okay.
If you purchase wheat germ oil, just make sure it goes in the mouth, and that way when it gets into your body, it will have its great benefit for you. How about that?
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
About how much a day do I take?
What form did you get?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. It's in liquid form.
Okay, it's a liquid form.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, yes, a teaspoon a day is probably going to be excellent.
Okay.
It really is.
Okay, because I've been diagnosed with cataracts, and I don't want to have surgery if I don't have to.
Well, can you see pretty well right now?
Yes. With diabetes, it kind of gets a little different.
Well, is there one particular eye that you've lost a little bit of your visual field where it's a little bit blurry in certain areas?
Yes, my left eye, and it waters a lot, so it must be dry. So.
Yeah, and that's where if you take cod liver oil, also like the wheat germ oil, orally, that's actually been shown to increase lubrication of the tear ducts, and that's a good thing.
Great.
And plus, cod liver oil, it really is a superfood.
Okay.
Actually, that's the new... we're starting the program over. Today, we're going to talk about superfoods, folks. We're going to talk about wheat germ oil to reduce cataract formation and reverse it, and we're going to talk about cod liver oil for eye health. So those are two very, very good things. Now, one experiment that I'll try, and you have to tell me if you feel comfortable with it. I'm not twisting your arm, but sometimes that's what I'll do if a person, when they go to bed at night, I'll have them put a drop or two of castor oil in their eyes if they want to. I can't force a person to do that.
Okay. Now, the castor oil goes in the eyes because I bought the dropper bottle and everything.
Yeah,
the castor oil goes in the eyes, and I consume
You know what I would do if it were me?
What?
I would try it on your husband's first. Just wait till he falls asleep, and then just pry his eyeball open and just drop something in it.
The other day, he went to the doctor, and he had some scar tissue on his eyeball, and it bothered him pretty bad, and so I put some silver salt in his eyes.
Oh, yeah. How'd that do?
It did great. Of course, that eliminates any kind of infection, so that was good.
Oh, that's a good call on your part. Excellent.
Yeah, and I put it in my eyes also.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I put a drop every day.
Everything that I'm telling you is what I do for myself, or have done for myself, so.
Okay, so the castor oil goes in the eye with the eye drops. So do I mix it, do I put any cod liver oil or anything in with that?
No, I just think if we stick with castor oil. The one product that I may have mentioned on the radio last week was a product that I've purchased off Amazon called Can C. It's just CAN-C, like the letter C.
Yes, and the granary didn't have any of that, and I don't have a computer, so I don't get to do any of that computer work. I don't get to order anything off the computer.
Well, here's our plan today. you're going to follow the lead of the woman that just called. You're going to run away from home today. And when you run away, you're going to get a smartphone at Dollar General. And you're going to find out where, which tent under the bridge that you're living at, and you're going to give them the address, and they're going to mail it there.
Well, I live in the dark ages. I can barely answer the telephone, turn the TV on. I don't do any tweeting or twatting or whatever that stuff, Facebooking.
Yeah, but
or...
you sound extremely intelligent to me. Do you have any kids?
Yes, I have one daughter and one grandson, and I used to be one of your customers. So
there you go. Just ask your granddaughter to do it for you.
Okay.
Well, your daughter.
Yeah, my daughter. Okay.
How old's the grandson?
He's nearly 9.
Oh, are you kidding? He could do this in his sleep.
Yes, he can. They've got all their machines. They do all that stuff.
Well, ask him to do it for you. It'll be a piece of cake.
Okay, CanSee. Now, how do I take the CanSee?
You put it in the eyes, just like the... Well, if you'll purchase the product, you'll just follow the direction, but it's eye drops.
Okay. Now, back to the osteopenia. I was diagnosed with osteopenia this week, and last September 19th, I fell and broke both of my ankles. So what can I, and I have a little bit of calcium buildup in my arteries, so they want me to take some calcium, so I went and got some standard processed calcium lactate. And I thought, if I've already got
some
calcium.
Well, who are you getting it? Well, who's your doctor? Who's taking care of you?
Well, my medical doctor didn't.
If you have calcium that's building up in an artery, then what you need is... Calcium is being deposited where it doesn't belong.
Yeah.
So you need some vitamin K2.
Okay, K2. Because I asked him, I said, listen, I've got a little bit of calcium in my arteries now. Is this going to help put some more there? And they said, oh, no. Well, you know, doctors, they don't practice wellness. They practice medicine. I'm not taking medicine. So I don't do medicines.
Well, are your ankles healed now?
Oh, yes.
How's your balance?
Pretty good.
You're going to do the experiment. You're going to stand on one foot with your eyes closed and tell me if you can keep your balance for 30 seconds on one leg.
Yes, I sure can. I did it every day.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yes, I practice that. And I walk around. I walk around outside on barefooted on really nice grass, even though I don't like to.
You're really, really serious. If you were right here in front of me right now and I said, all right, ma'am, stand on one foot, take your shoe off, stand barefoot on the floor, and I want you to lift your other leg up like a stork.
Kind of funny.
Like maybe a Lake Palestine, a great blue heron or something. But I stand on one foot, and I tell you what, that would be very, very impressive because that's going to be a very clear reflection of how well neurologically your brain is integrated with the rest of the body.
And I take good care of my brain. I eat Brazil nuts and walnuts every day. But anyway, so what do I need to eat for this osteopenia? I'm not happy about this.
Well, obviously you want to err on the side of getting fat first. And that's one of the reasons why if you like olives or high-quality olive oil or avocados or you like butter and coconut oil.
Yes, I do all those.
You like eggs?
Yes, I love fresh eggs.
Do you know what a piezoelectric crystal is?
No.
All right. Sometimes piezoelectric crystals, they'll put them in a little bitty clicker device, and where you press it, you rub the crystals together. But what it does is it generates electrical charge, so you could actually like shock somebody with one of them. But anyway, my point is, every time when you do a weight loading step on your foot, or you bend, or put your body under a loaded stress, you cause a piezoelectric charge, and that's what causes these bone cells called osteoblasts to grow new bone. So I know it sounds different, but it's almost like somebody's taking a cattle prod and shocking your bone cells and forcing them to grow new bone. But that's the way it works.
Now spell
and
that. That
piezoelectric.
Mm-hmm.
P-I-Z.
Mm-hmm.
O.
Mm-hmm.
And then the word electric.
Oh, okay.
It's a piezoelectric crystal, which is... When you look at calcium inside the bones, it's in the crystalline form or crystal form. Have you ever seen like quartz before?
Yes.
I think it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen anything that was crystallized? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, salt, there's a crystal.
Yeah, I've been inside of caves where they had that crystal hanging down there. It's beautiful.
I'm seriously thinking about moving to a cave this afternoon.
Oh, well, it'd be cooler.
There you go. There's side benefit number two. I never thought about it.
Absolutely. But, now, where do I get this?
Well, it's just what your body does. I'm not telling you to get it off.
Oh, okay.
I was just explaining that when you exercise. Now, what's your age?
63.
Okay. Well, then you're going to be the most impressive person. So vitamin K2 probably has more to do with trying to get calcium in your bones than any other element that I know of.
Okay, great.
And so do you like to eat chicken with its skin on?
Yes, I do. And I make my own broth, my own chicken broth.
Then you're set. There's not much I can tell you. You've already got everything mastered. Okay. Way to go.
Does Standard Process make this K2?
No, I mean, you get some of it when you eat fresh whole butter and when you eat the yolks of eggs, but usually if somebody has osteopenia,
mm-hmm.
But you're telling me that you have osteopenia, right?
Yes, that's what they said.
Okay, there are other factors, so yeah, just get some vitamin K2, minoquinone 4 or minoquinone 7 or both.
Spell that minone.
If you just go to the store and ask for vitamin K2, then its scientific name is minoquinone 4
okay.
and 7.
Okay.
But just call it a fat-soluble vitamin, vitamin K2.
Now, I go to the store to get this or to the granary, to the health food store?
Well, I'm going to suggest you go to the health food store.
Okay, vitamin okay. K2.
I know AutoZone sounds like it'd be a good place to go for K2, but
well,
I usually don't go there for that.
Okay, but I like Standard Process products best, so if they don't have it, I guess I'll just have to get the best.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much for your phone call.
Well, thank you, and I'm going to get off now so somebody else can take time. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open. Let me go back to this sunshine. Nitric oxide is a native molecule of crucial importance for health, especially in cardiovascular health. And what do? Sunbathe. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I've been diagnosed with candida, fungus, and parasites.
And who diagnosed you with all those things?
My chiropractor in Longview.
Well, then what is their plan?
He has me on a bunch of Standard Process products, and I wanted to know what else I could do.
Boy, you're just like laying everything out, aren't you?
Well, this must have been contributing to leaky gut.
Well, did you ask him questions when you were there with him?
I think I was so overwhelmed.
Well,
I was like, what?
Well, tell me how did all this transpire?
I went in for a checkup.
What kind of checkup?
You know, I can't really remember.
Were you there for your knee or your foot?
No. I went in for just a periodic, you know, adjustment. I think I needed my back adjusted. And I said something about my gut, and he tested me and said I had these things. And
then he gave you some recommendations, right?
Mm-hmm, yes, like 5 things. Of recommendations. So, but food-wise, I wanted to know, is there anything I should be doing food-wise? I'm almost done with the monthly protocol.
Yeah, I'm kind of a huge fan of starving out, even though the word parasite's a very, very broad term. It just suggests there's some type of bug living inside of you that's not doing you any favors, right?
Right.
I mean, if you had
that's what I'm thinking.
If there was beneficial flora in your gut, well, that would do you some favors. That would help you digest your food. That would help break down carcinogenic waste. That would help clean your body. It would help produce vitamins and nutrients for you. It would make all these compounds that make your body so much healthier. But parasites, don't know that they really do a lot of good. There are a few exceptions, maybe. Like if a woman needs to lose weight, I mean, tapeworms are pretty precise remedies for weight loss. I mean, I'm sort of joking about that. I'm not recommending tapeworms. And so what you do is you starve them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I'm just going to be drastic.
So I did. I cut sugar out totally.
Exactly.
And
so under normal circumstances, about 15% of all the food that you put in your mouth is not really for you at all. It's to feed and nourish those good, beneficial bacteria. Which, the last time I checked, I think the current estimate's a 10-to-1 ratio. So, for every cell that makes up your body, you have 10 microbes. That's a huge, huge number. So, if you have I'm just going to make up a number, 100 trillion cells that make up your body, well, you multiply that by 10, you have the type of bacteria that are living on your skin and behind your ears and in your ears and your nose and your mouth, but mainly in your gut. That's where they belong. And so a lot of those good beneficial microbes, they kind of have to die and go away in order for parasites and yeast to move in. Can I talk about yeast just for a second?
Yes.
Okay. I think it's unreasonable to try to express that it's that we should be 100% totally sterile from yeast. It's just a common occurring organism. And maybe the point that I'm getting to is, what you want is you want the dominant species of bacteria to be the good guys. And when that's the when you have enough good beneficial good guys, the rest of them aren't a problem at all. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you don't have enough good guys? That's where it's much easier for things like candida and yeast to actually move in and set up shop. And I know it's kind of a gross way of saying this, so please forgive me, but I'm all boy. But candida goes tee-tee and poo-poo inside of you, and parasites do also, and it's that toxic, vile waste. I have a daughter that's making a face at me right now, suggesting I shouldn't have said that. But it's all that toxic, vile waste that they release. And that could actually make a person feel sick. I was reading an article this morning about, you know what hyperbaric oxygen?
I've heard of it.
You know, where they might, let's just say a person has an unresponsive condition and they can't get any results, so they might take them and put them in a pressurized chamber where they're pretty close to breathing more purified, concentrated oxygen. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about this was it was showing that it helps bugs in the body die off. It's called a Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction. So when people get the hyperbaric oxygen treatments, they might feel for a few days afterwards, they just don't feel so hot. But that's because candida and other spirochetes and parasites are dying, which is what you want. You want the body to be free from low-grade infections. I would say the number one reason why candida grows in the human body is because there's too much toxic debris and waste. And so when that's the case, they tend to come on board because that's what they do. They eat dead, decomposing waste that your body cannot detoxify. So sometimes with yeast, I'll have a person get that standard process formula called Spanish black radish. Are you taking that?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Well, what it does is it does a very, very good job of helping minimize toxic Herxheimer reactions by helping to kind of gently sweep out or detoxify any dead fungus or parasites.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one idea.
I have taken it in the past.
I think the more living, radiant food that you eat, the better off you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have felt like the parasites don't really care for fat very much. Thus, I tend to like things like coconut oil, wheat germ oil, olive oil, fish oil, black currant seed oil, sesame seed oil, because they can't eat that. But what they like is they like sugar, and they like starches and grains. And so,
and I've been off that pretty much.
Okay.
For over a month, I've been.
Well, what do you think the results are so far? What you're doing?
I don't know. I have no weight loss.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Was he trying to tell you that the primary root cause of your problems was a leaky gut?
I don't know.
Well, I don't
honestly
either.
I need to go ask him. It didn't dawn on me, really, leaky gut, till listening to you this morning.
Well, but was he saying that, ma'am, you have a parasite? That is completely your problem. Totally, 100% of it. Did he say that?
No, he didn't.
Well, see, I can't read a person's mind, so I could only, I mean, I could
say. So I'm going to have to ask him that.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to ask. So, is that what you said a while ago? Is that really what you had in mind, that if this were resolved, you'd lose weight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the crux of the matter right there. You were hoping that if you took care of this problem,
right,
you would lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I wondered if this is all contributing. How long does it usually take to get rid of this kind of an issue?
It really depends on how healthy a person is. Let me say it this way, and I realize these are just my thoughts on this. If I have a person in front of me that I think is really, really healthy, I usually tell them. And, you know, but part of me is doing that to encourage them, because I don't want them to focus on their negative symptoms that they have, and I want to just say, you know what, ma'am, I really, really think that you're healthy, but you've got this little bit of an issue right here in your gut, and I really think that we need to correct that. I'm not saying you have any diseases. And mm-hmm. the truth is, even if they mm-hmm. went to a medical doctor and had all the gamut of laboratory tests done, it probably wouldn't show anything. They'd come back and the doctor would say, you're as healthy as a horse. And you're going to say,
right.
Well, why can't I lose weight? And why do I feel bad? And why do I have the X, Y, and Z symptoms?
Mm-hmm.
And so the stronger and the healthier a person is, the faster they change. I just see it over and over again.
Makes sense.
However, have you ever heard the term telomere?
No.
Okay. Telomeres are these little bitty snippets at the very end of your chromosomes. So we're kind of going really deep into your cells where you have your DNA or your genes. But you've heard the term chromosomes, right?
Definitely.
And so telomeres, when they can be measured and they are generous and abundant, I'm telling you, the body can heal almost anything. But I'm going to make a drastic example out of this. At the far end of the spectrum, sometimes I have older people come to me, and they have literally waited way, 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 way too long to try to turn their health around. And as a result, their telomeres are just completely gone, which means the cells can no longer divide. And if the cells can't divide, then they can't repair. So what you see is you see the body break down faster. So if it was a normal person like you, I could probably use very, very simple, precise remedies to strengthen you and to improve you and help you overcome parasites and yeast. And your body would say, oh, my word, this is easy. It's a cakewalk. I can get over, I've restored my health. I feel like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
But when the telomeres are short, meaning the candle is just about burnt out on that human being, that's when you give them remedies that would work with anybody else, but it just it takes, it's painfully slow. But, you know, a person has to decide, do they want to get well? Do they want to improve themselves while they're alive? But I've seen so many people just literally go from a radiant 140 pounds, if that's a normal weight, down to 85 pounds, and they're just shrinking. Their body's eating itself. They're in a catabolic state, and they keep losing weight, and they wonder, why can't I get over this infection? And so that's probably the way that I would want to say it if I were in front of you right now. I would say,
wow.
Okay, I'm telling you that you have... Can I just use Candida as my example?
You bet.
Okay. So here's the question I could propose to you, and I think this is a fair question for you to ask anybody that brings it up. You could say, okay, so you're saying I have Candida. Well, I'm gonna give you two choices, doctor. Do I need to, or maybe three, do I need to try to kill the Candida? And so he could try to resolve that issue. He'd say, all right, what am I going to give you to kill the Candida? Do I give you Oregon grapefruit? Do I give you lavender oil? Do I give you thyme? How about oregano? What about using ginger or plant tannins or goldenrod? What about using any caprylic acid, any antifungal agents? What about using, enzymes to help digest it and break it down? Well, that's a fair question, but what if that's not the answer? What if the answer is your body wants to be strengthened in response to it? So if I found Candida, let's just say, for example, do you know what the ileocecal valve is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Candida usually messes that up, meaning the valve doesn't open and close. So to me, it's pretty common. If the valve clamps down in a hard spasm, you've got what? Constipation. But if the valve doesn't close all the way, that's when you can really make a girl feel kind of sick or sluggish or exhausted all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But the stool is going to be broken apart in pieces, or it can just be a very foul-smelling mush. Sorry, I know it's breakfast time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to gross you out. So I would say, what do we need to do here? Do we need to try to change the environment so Candida doesn't grow, or do we need to kill it? Or maybe another question is, do I need to strengthen the organs so they can actually heal themselves? So that's probably a little bit too much to talk about on Saturday morning.
That, no, that's interesting because I have an ileocecal valve problem.
Well, it's just the very unique toxins that fungus and parasites would release. They tend to very, very adversely affect sphincter valve. And what will happen is, if it doesn't shut precisely all the way, then what you have is you have leakage, and the leakage can
mm-hmm.
go backwards in the intestines. And any time that you have mid-gut irritation, it's going to produce a stool that's, like, not formed.
So that's why leaky gut is...
Well, I'm not even talking
about
it.
I never made the connection.
I don't know that leaky gut is the main issue. I mean, anybody else that's selling a book or selling supplements that were based on that would disagree with me. But then again, that's their focus for the moment.
Have you ever heard of the zapper for parasites?
Yeah, but I don't know that I've really seen that. I mean, I've tried it an awful lot. I wish I could just really tell you that the zapper works.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it goes back to the fundamental question. All right. Back in the early 90s, there was a physician that came up with a theory that, I'm not so sure he didn't win a Nobel Prize in medicine for his theory, but it was called functional reserve. Now, let me give you an example. The concept of functional reserve would be your heart is in great working order, you can do whatever you want, but then you have the death of a loved one, and then you go through a divorce, and then you go through bankruptcy, and then you get caught for embezzlement, and then you have one stressful, these are just ideas, I'm not saying, but you just have one thing after the other, then you have two DWIs, and so all these things kind of eke away at the heart, and they stress it, and so when the heart pretty much has nothing left in reserve, bam, it's at that point you're going to have a heart attack. And so my concept is a little bit different. I'm trying to find a way to get the gut to be stronger and more radiant so it can resist parasites instead of saying, wow, what about a zapper? Well, your body is the zapper. Your body is the zapper. And if it's working right, it's going to repel parasites and not allow them to really take a foothold. But you have to do your job, too. I mean, if you're going to go to the taco shack that, you know, the person from Honduras never washes their hands after going to the bathroom, you're asking for it.
That's right.
And you think those things don't happen, but I see these things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I walked into a restaurant one day in Jacksonville, and the waitress was saying, oh, my word, I have mononucleosis. I can't even believe that they're letting me work today. And so I said, Mr. Manager, did you just hear what your employee is saying, the one that's handling the food? He goes, that's not too good, is it? I said, no. Anyway. But then I haven't been to Chili's in 10 years, so that answers that question. Oh, wait, did I say the restaurant's name? Rats. Rats, never mind. Maybe it was called the Chili Bowl. Okay, that could have been. Anyway, but that would be a plan, cleaning your body. And well, what did the physician recommend supplement-wise? I'm just curious.
It's all standard process. It's, I'd have to go in and check what it is.
Oh, never mind. Don't worry about that. But I sure hope I've helped you.
You have. You've helped me tremendously.
Just go back and ask questions.
I am. I'm going to ask questions. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I guess that could be several questions. You could say, Mr. Doctor or Mrs. Doctor, is it because I need something to kill them? Do I need a zapper? Or is it because maybe the lining of my gut's a little bit weak and that makes it easier for a yeast, which normally would pass through, to kind of attach to my body? Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hello?
Yes, Dr. Morgan?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell me what a chalky feeling in the mouth, the finger, tips, and the toes mean?
I did not hear anything you said. I apologize. What'd you say?
Can you tell me what a chalky feeling in the mouth, fingertips, and toes mean?
I don't know why it is, but I am not making out what you're saying. Sorry. I heard mouth, and that's all
okay.
I heard.
Okay. I have a chalky feeling, like a chalk feeling in my mouth, my toes, and my fingertips.
Okay. What about your toes and fingertips? You have a chalky feeling in your mouth, right?
Yes, and a dry, chalky feeling in my fingertips and toes.
Okay. Okay, I don't know if I'm sure how to handle that, but let me have a go at it though. Normally in your mouth, you should have just very, very generous amounts of good beneficial microbes and bacteria. But if you have more toxic bacteria than you do friendly bacteria, or if you have yeast growing, the mucus in your mouth becomes very, very thick and you feel like your mouth is sticky and dry.
Okay.
Does that answer anything, or am I off base?
You could be just fine.
But what about, I don't understand what you were saying about your fingertips and your toes.
It's a dry feeling, like a chalky dry feeling.
Of your toes. Okay.
And my fingertips.
Well, is your skin real dry? Do you have cold hands?
No, it's just, it's not that I feel it physically. It's just like a inner feeling. I don't know how to describe that.
Okay, well, that may be where the glitch is right there. Sometimes, and I just have never heard a person say I have a dry, chalky feeling of my fingertips and toes, so please forgive me for not having heard that before.
That's fine.
And see, I thought I'd heard everything. This goes to show I've heard nothing. That does it. I've decided I'm going to practice for 30 more years until I get more information. But what you want is the tips of the fingers and the tips of the toes. These are where you have very ends of very precise nerve fibers. Do you feel like you have plenty of stamina and endurance?
No.
Would you consider maybe consuming what are called essential fatty acids?
Yes.
Well, why don't you take some of those and see if you're not better in a short period of time?
That could be
everything from, I'm kind of a fan of cod liver oil. Why don't you try taking a double dose of cod liver oil over the next few days and tell me if you see something that would be considered arbitrary proof or an observation that you're feeling better.
Okay.
Do you have any fingers that are numb, though?
Only when our nerve pinches in my shoulder.
Okay. Well, if I were guessing, I'd say, all right, what can we do to improve blood flow to the fingertips? I'd probably give you some fish oil. Do you exercise at all?
I try to go walking, and have six kids running around the house all day long.
You say you're like a little kid running around the house?
No, I have six children, and I walk all day in the house. I don't sit much.
No, you do not sit much. Well, I mean, that's one thing that can deplete you is just, you know, having a baby grow in your tummy, nursing a baby. The kids have just pretty much sucked you dry, haven't they?
Yes.
But you still love them, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, why don't you try taking some good oils? Maybe you could try taking a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil with a little bit of lemon juice every morning, and let's see if we get you better. Usually the palms and the soles of the feet and the toes, I would call these overflow points, but what I usually think of is I think of the liver. Now, I'm not asking you to answer this question, but as a general rule, when the liver is in great working order, a person's oozing with happiness, and if the liver is a little bit sluggish, it's a little bit harder for them to be happy, so I'm not telling you to answer that. Just ask yourself. And so olive oil and lemon juice in the morning. Maybe you could focus on just eating greens and meat and vegetables for a while and laying off all grains. Go for a walk in the morning. I mean, what could really go wrong if you leave all six kids home alone? Seriously, what could go wrong? I mean, yeah, they could come home to like a, you know, a hot stove where all the kids try to make tea or coffee for themselves or something like that.
Yeah.
If it were me, I would rub shea butter on the tips of all my fingers and toes and tell me if they're better by the next day.
Okay.
All right. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye. All right. Number here at the station is 903-586-5257. There's really just about a minute or so left in the program. Let me share this with you right here. I think this is very interesting. An article that comes from Heal Your Heart. Anyway, can healing your heart reduce your risk of breast cancer? Researchers at the Institute of Heart Math think so. Their decades of research have concluded that the heart plays a big role in regulating stress throughout the body. That might be kind of interesting to consider. A stressed mind and heart lead to a stressed body, making it vulnerable to DNA damage and replication of unhealthy cells. It can cause cancer. Okay? Douglas Brody, MD, has identified key personality traits that can increase one's chances of breast cancer. These include having a strong tendency toward carrying other people's burdens. You've never heard of that, have you? Taking on extra obligations. You know what that means. And then, lastly, holding on to feelings of anger, resentment, bitterness, and hostility, and not being able to cope with stress just real, real well. So I'm going to ask myself a question. Have I ever done those things? Yes. Have I carried other people's burdens? Yes. Has it been wrong? Yeah, for the most part. Anyway, it's been a pleasure being with you today. Lord willing, I'll be back this next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. In the meantime, I hope everybody has a great weekend. Thanks.